felt inspired to, this morning, I thought perhaps I'd read a little bit from this text called An Introduction to a Message in Our Time. My Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan. It's a commemorative book for the centennial, which is this year, this last month, September 13th, when Hazrat Inayat Khan launched his journey to the West to bring this message of spiritual liberty and universal Sufism, which brings us here together today. And this chapter, I thought, was interesting and relates to our subject. It's called Injustice, Injustice. Injustice, Injustice. And sometimes, this is written by Hidayat Inayat Khan, but Hiram Murshid Inayat Khan would often say also, justice in injustice. You know, you've heard the expression, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And it relates to what Ibrahim was saying. You know, also sometimes, you know that if you're parents, sometimes you have to let that child fall and get up on its own. And sometimes they have to touch something hot and get burnt. And sometimes we love very much, we see them just, in our view, making choices that are harmful. But we know that they're their lessons. Who are we to judge? If we're asked, we can offer. But everyone has their own steps they have to take. And sometimes that's also an ego trip. I'm going to heal you, I'm going to teach you, I'm going to help you. Who are we? What are we doing? We're all in the soup pot together, yeah?
Only we can stop anybody from making their own mistakes, but we also should not. Because our understanding of what is a mistake,
that's right. That's exactly right.
That we have no right to other people. Actually, no, to reach out and help. We are interfering with their well-being and health.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Injustice, injustice. To human understanding, justice means returning good for good and bad for bad, according to basic legal principles. Whereas seen from another angle, the concept of justification is obviously limited to personal experiences interpreted according to the conflicting influences of one's surroundings and preconceived ideas, which result in either destructive motives or unjustified infatuations with persons or concepts, producing that which one is persuaded in one's own opinion of right and wrong. When confronted by such calamities of nature as tornadoes, floods, earthquakes, and volcanic eruptions, and the disastrous consequences thereby encountered, the human understanding of the concept of justice is seriously challenged. And again, when seeing the cruelties perpetuated in the animal world, where some creatures are given life with the necessity to kill so that they may survive, whereas others are destined to be offered as nourishment to the stronger ones, it is then that one's faith regarding any concept of justice is completely shattered. And one is left wondering whether divine compassion could ever be found. If any of you have been in a hospital or a cancer center and you see the little babies there that are coming in for their treatments, you see justice is. What kind of God? We've all asked it. We've all asked it. Or these earthquakes and famines, and we see it all around us. And people begin to question, where's God's compassion in that? But from another view, another view, another view, perhaps it can be seen. But we sometimes are challenged. Obviously, the human understanding of justice cannot in truth follow the lines of the Creator's logic. That it might seek to compromise for a way out of the paradoxical laws of creation, which constantly baffle the human and animal realms. Because that is a way that destiny, with a capital D, that is the way that destiny has chosen to proclaim its all-pervading magnificence. Seen from another perspective, nature's characteristics offer quite a different picture. As far as its contestable signs of compassion reach, and where it does appear to be compassionate, as for example, resulting in the gift of natural instinct to the animal kingdom. To humankind, free will has been bestowed, allowing the ability to wisely maneuver along lines of individual judgment with determination. But these qualities could never be of any use to others without the warmth of the heart toward those in need. If absolute justice, according to one's personal understanding, cannot be found in nature, nor in humanity, nor in the animal worlds, one might perhaps venture to discover one's own responsibility to help others overcome the detrimental effects of injustice experienced at all levels of compassion, as opposed to maintaining illusionary justifications of divine compassion as variously understood from a human point of view. Human compassion is expressed with sympathetic understanding and love, without expecting anything in return. But again, love is perhaps only found at a deeper level in one person than in another. Just as water is discovered at different depths beneath the earth, and is either clear or muddy according to the condition of the soil. So, that's good. That is good. Just as water is discovered at different depths beneath the earth and is either clear or muddy according to the conditions of the soil, likewise, human understanding is either cloudy or bright in accordance with the condition of the heart. again, the purification practices, the wazifas, they're like conditioning the heart. You know? Conditioning the heart. Furthermore, just as water makes the earth fertile, in the same way, the magic of love makes the heart abundantly compassionate. And every impulse that arises, sooner or later, bears sweet and fragrant fruit. It is then that divine compassion can be found, concealed as a pearl hidden in a shell. What a beautiful analogy, because we know how that pearl gets formed by that grain of sand getting in there and irritating. Do you see? I mean, there's a benefit to it all. It's a wonderful example. It is then that divine compassion can be found, concealed as a pearl is hidden in the shell. And blessed are those who have the privilege of discovering that precious jewel, which is nevertheless the inheritance of every soul. I'm sorry, can you say it again?
Is that the volume you were referring to as you opened? The one that's about to be published, but is available by pre-subscription? This is the one?
This book that I just read from? No, this is available. Now I can give my public service announcement. We do have some of these for sale here. This has already been published. And it also is available online through blurb.com. Now, only recently published, yes. Yeah. And the other text that we're reading from is the unpublished Physicians of the Heart. We were synced up because your question related beautifully to that, didn't it? Yeah, yeah. And this morning it came, I should share that it wasn't part of the program, so to speak. So again, a pithy explanation of Ghaffar could be the divine quality of forgiveness that relieves us from the suffering of continual remembrance of our own faults. And Ghaffar could be the divine quality of forgiveness that keeps our faults even from the angels. It was said like that. It's beautiful when you think about it. In one sense, it's hidden from our own eyes. In another sense, it's hidden from the view of everyone and everything. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the reasons. This is the reason. You know, the Prophet Muhammad gave modesty to his wife by veiling the wedding bed. There's so much talk about this. So much discussion for a piece of fabric. But what's the true meaning of it? Consideration. It doesn't matter if one has this. I'm bringing this up because I've been involved in discussions with Moroccan scholars about it. There's a lot of press about this idea of veiling or unveiling, you know. there are two more sacred names that I'm hoping to cover, and which are offered through this text, the Physicians of the Heart. And I think I shall read about both of them, and we can then perform the entire practice, the sequence, together. The next level is Ya-Tawab. Tawab is T-A-W-W-A-B, Tawab. And again, now we're moving beyond this, another level of forgiveness, and it says, going beyond, there is an inner stage. Now you actually become able to turn away from perceived defects and shadows and face directly toward the divine perfection. At-Tawab is the divine reality that you can turn to in such a way. And the activity of turning. So it's beautiful when you think about it. Eva just left to lead this Turner class. The activity of turning. And we're constantly turning. The whole universe is turning. We literally turn from the defect and toward Allah, toward God. From and toward. Moving from this, again, we did that practice yesterday. From the limited to the unlimited. Bringing the unlimited into the limited. The zikr. La ilaha. El Allah. We literally turn from the defect and toward Allah. From and toward are expressed simultaneously by the same verb in Arabic. Tala in Hebrew is equivalent to Tobo or Taba, which is the same as Teshuva. It's written here. In Judaism, between Rosh Hashanah, the new year, and Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, are the 10 days of Teshuvah. Is that right?
It means coming back returning, but on another dimension also means answers.
Answers.
I
appreciate it so much, yes.
Yeshua is returning, repenting yourself.
Does anyone know that song? Oh, here it's coming. Return again.
Return again. Return again. Return to the land of your soul.
Can we, well, let's sing it. Can someone help it? Because that's a beautiful...
I'm not good about singing.
I know the words.
Can you help, Karina Gita?
Thank you.
This, I think, beautifully describes this idea that we're constantly returning. And it said at these 10 days that this is the time that's set aside to turn within, to turn to God. To turn away from the point of view of the ego, limited to unlimited. What does it mean to say that we turn from a defect and turn towards Allah? We are turning towards and are returning to with At-Tawwab. And it said here, because of the sound code embedded in the Arabic grammar, we know that At-Tawwab must have the quality which manifests continually, without beginning, end or interruption. Return.
It also removes the stress of discontentment. If you're in a circle, you just wait. It's okay. Why get upset over it? So the accepting of how cyclic everything is, remove the discontent.
And as Anayat Khan said, when the train was pulling away, another one will come. Thank you. This allows us to see Allah is always turning towards us, always returning to us. When we give God bad words, God gives us good words. That is God's way of turning. At-Tawwab is always turning towards you without interruption. This is very important to understand! Exclamation point in the text. With the invocation, it's a beautiful way of saying recitation of Wazifa, with the invocation, invoking that name. With the invocation of At-Tawwab, you turn from the defect that you perceive to the face of Allah, who is always facing you. It allows you to let go of the grudge that you've been holding on to and to face toward the light. It means to forgive someone by facing away from the defect towards Allah, who is always forgiving. Have we not heard this before in another way? Turn the other cheek. You see, if the ego is right there and something's coming, but if you turn it and face towards God, it's all offered to God. It's all offered to Allah.
When Kabus founded the first temple, I ran to his house, and he said to the whole bunch of super camp people who want to know how to do it, don't tell them. And you don't tell them, you want to know, they want to be counted. Too many people express that I have cancer gives it more reality.
Yes, that's right.
And I understood it.
Yes.
But I convinced him otherwise because people want to be counted, leaving them out. But it means tell the way for, it's not denial. Don't give the bad news too much reality.
Yes.
If you talk about it, it becomes your reality, you are populated, now you're a victim.
That's right.
That was a good lesson.
Beautiful lesson. And again, it's, you know, and Anayat Khan emphasizes that in the Sufi message on healing, because he talks about those impressions. And we hear this in other ways. You know, I loved, some years ago, Deepak Chopra came to Kansas City. He comes sometimes and he gives public talks. And he was talking about this idea of disease that's retained in the body. And he said, really, from a physical point of view, it's almost impossible because the organs and the whole body sloughs off the old cells and they get regenerated. So he proposed to the people listening to him, and he teaches this also in his texts, and of course he comes from a medical profession as well as from the Eastern tradition, and he said that one has to ask what remains, why the disease is remaining there. It's held in the mind, it's concretized. And here also the elements come into play. I've said this before, but you know, some of you know this, you knew me when it was going on, but some years ago I had a very large mass in one of my breasts. So much so that they wouldn't even, you know, the first thing they want to do is a needle biopsy. And they said, no, it is too suspicious, we don't want to even take the chance that it's going to pull something out of that into your bloodstream. So, I was at the time under Murshida Vera, God rest her soul, supervision, spiritual guidance. And she said to me, will you ask the doctors, because they've been checking this for a while, can you ask the doctors to have 1 month? Is it? Can you have 1 month before the surgery? And I asked the surgeon and the person, the doctors that were looking, examining this, and they said, yes, because it's growing in such a way that it's not 1 month isn't going to really matter. So she said, now I want you to understand that disease, its most gross manifestation is in the physical. But that disease can arise in other planes. You have to work with the elements, the elemental breaths, earth, water, fire, air, ether. And you find out, did that start in the spiritual realm for you? Did it come down into the mental realm, or did it start there? Did it come into the area of your passions and appetites? Did it come in some assault in the emotional body? Water. Okay, all the way down. Then it comes into the physical. She said, if you don't find where it started and work at it there, she said, I assure you, they can cut it out, they can burn it out, and they can poison it. It will come again. You have to deal with it at that level. Now, here's another call to do these practices. And you know, they went in, and that suspicious mass was not anything that could bring greater harm. So this is something to think about. These are not just, you know, I mean, they do something. It does something. But there is the mystical, metaphysical dimension of the breath. We use it for mastery, but you see, I'm telling you, I might not be here today if it hadn't been for that instruction.
The New Agey phrase, it's all good. The what?
It's all good. And it's all God. We've been using that as a mantra. Yes. Yes. Yes.
It's difficult for me to understand mine.
Yes.
The case of practical, complete effect. If you don't have your mind producing the results,
this
you
is
come
very
to it with attachment to our
attached.
Time.
You know, last year at this time, people know that, but know me, my mom had had that bad fall and broke her hip and her arm. And she had a hard time with it. She kept saying, why did this happen? Why did this happen? Why did this happen? Why did this? And why am I so badly hurt from this little teeny fall? And it's not, I mean, her bones and everything are very good. It wasn't that. She's not fragile. But I said to her, and I really did believe this, I said, Mother, we have to look at it as a great lesson. We don't know if this hasn't prevented you from even a greater harm. Maybe you being in this recuperation phase has kept you from something else. We don't know this, but we can assume that this is a blessing and grace in some way. It changed, it helped change it. Just kept turning towards that.
When you were doing the only practice, trying to come to your own perception of your illness.
Yes.
Did you come to a clear perception of that?
It was very clear. And it came with it a whole very deep memory. That you see some of these things, and perhaps this is something that can be highlighted, so thank you for your question. I think some of these things become cellular, cyclical. They're embedded as subtle impressions, and then all of a sudden it can happen. There's some body work done, and all of a sudden something shifts in us. Something gets released. The energy of that. Sometimes there's a memory. Sometimes if there's pre-verbal things that happen, there's no words to describe it. It's feeling. These are the subtle dimensions of healing and forgiveness. And for me, it was very clear. But it was something that, in some ways, for me, had been a little bit hidden. But it was always subtly there and kind of preventing that next step for me. So in that way, all that manifesting was a real blessing. And she did tell me, it wasn't like just going up and down the elemental scale. She kind of said, work with one element till you're sure that it's not residing in that elemental field, and then go to the next one, and the next one to make sure they're clear. It was a beautiful, beautiful teaching. Amazing. And you know, it's really our own really experiencing deeply and not being afraid to feel our humanity and our own individuated suffering. When we go through that, when we are in that, when we go to the center of the suffering, when we just are that, something arises in us. Another beautiful teaching. Some years ago, Karuna Maima, some of you know her, she had been invited to teach at the abode. She's a spiritual teacher and also a very highly recognized singer in India. And she had been invited to the abode of the message in Upper State New York to give lessons. And she... I had been invited to accompany her, And I thought that was a great blessing and privilege. And we were staying in a residence there, and Karunaji has a suffering in her back and in her legs. And so one day, I mean, a lot of people wanted to offer therapeutic touch and things, but, you know, she's a very modest person. And so we have a good friendship and a relationship. And so I asked her, I said, can I touch you in a certain place? Now, I don't think of myself as a healer. I'm not a massage therapist. I'm none of those things. But I touched exactly where it hurt. And she went, oh, how did you know? And I said, well, no, I have that. I have that pain. And I know what relieves it. And she went, oh, now you know the meaning of your suffering? So we can learn how to relieve others. What a great teaching in that moment. So we don't have to be afraid. You know, here's another metaphor. I'm not even getting through this whole teaching, but it's coming. You know, first time in India, near the Dargavanai Khan, actually, if you've been there, it's one of the most impoverished areas in Delhi. It's called the Jubis. The people live with sticks and black trash bags, families of four. But you know, they have each other. And they're very generous and kind-hearted. And part of the work of the Darga is to offer land or food. But here's this beautiful kind of metropolis, this pristine, beautiful environment, and then there's this. But this is the beauty of it. It's all God. And I remember looking down, and there was like kind of a waste pool, kind of scummy and kind of green, and it was, but it also was beautiful. I mean, on myself and some of my artwork, I work with molds and fungi and do beautiful things with it, but that's another subject. But floating on that was a mala of beautiful marigolds. And I started to take a picture. And my companion said, why would you take a picture of that? And I said, to me, this is beautiful. And this is God. It's all there. You know, the sun and the excrement and the beauty of that fresh flowers. It represents all of the dimensions of God. And there was a beautiful quote that I had read on the way to on that journey, and it said this, because I think sometimes we feel purification or holiness means it can be very one-dimensional. But there was this beautiful quote about the river Ganges. And it said, the mother, Mother Ganga, is not sacred because of her purity, but because of her acceptance of all. The mother is not sacred because of her purity, but because of her acceptance of all. How amazing is that?
It provides a relief from the need to understand things. In the need to, I want to understand compassion. Not necessary. It really is. This our not understanding things, or our illusion that we are not enlightened, is part of the divine perfection. I personally try to leave it alone. Maybe, which kind of puts a lot of teachers out of business, but.
That's right. That's right.
You're my compassion for
that. That's right. Yes. And you know, in the question is implied the answer as well, which is wonderful when you think about it. You know, it reminds me of that Rumi poem, Love Dogs. You know that poem? I'll say it, but I don't have the reading here, but I can give the essence of it. So a man is praying, Allah, Allah, Allah. And a passerby says, why do you call out in this way? Do you ever hear a reply? And the man fell into a deep silence. And then it goes on that he was encouraged again to call out. And it's about, it says, it's like a dog moaning after its master. The call is the response. That yearning is the response. I was saying to someone just a little while ago, right before lunch, we were sitting together talking about sort of remembering, you know, we've been coming to these camps more than half of our lives. Together. We started as young women, and we were talking about, you know, the guardianship that's brought us now here all these years later, and I had said to her that I had a very strong impulse that my, especially my first initiator and guide, and it's proven to be this sense ever since, needed to be far away from me, not in my immediate vicinity. And the reason for that is because it made me stretch and reach. The call is the response. It says that Tawab is deeply healing because negativity is transformed into its opposite. This is spiritual alchemy. Because negativity is transformed into its opposite. This is spiritual alchemy. This is the, this can be seen portrayed in the wrathful deities in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, you know, or even in the Hindu tradition, Kali, you know, she has the head with blood dripping from and the skulls hanging around her, teeth and blood coming out of her mouth, you know, this is all about transformation of ignorance. Anger, lust, aggression, attachment, aversion. These deities represent the transformation of those states. And they always have a counterbalance. That's the active principle, and then there's always the passive representation of it as well. So you always see this. Mahakala and Avalokiteshvara. Chanan Dorji. Manjushri. We always have, you see, again, things are in, is it this side of the coin, is it this side of the coin?
The closer to the truth is in between the inspirium and the exterior. There is a moment of suspension of nothingness. That's perfection.
Well, and I gave a whole lecture on that, by the way. The title sounds like an oxymoron. It's called the mysticism of silence. And again, I keep encouraging people to be in between, to stand in the in-betweens. There's so much vitality in those gaps. And we're often urgently getting from this class to the next class, from here to home, from this big event in our life to the next big event, to this appointment to that appointment, and we forget the whole in between. And this was a very interesting story. Some of you have heard it, but I'll tell it again for those that haven't. This was recorded in Holland, where I gave the lecture. And the people that recorded it are professional videographers. They work for television and film. And they have these huge cameras and the big lights and the glasses so they can see. I mean, it's this big deal. 30 years, this has been the man's work. And they have two cameras. One that's hooked, sort of more face-on, and pan the group that's in attendance. And it's hooked directly into the mic that I was speaking from. And then there's another one that's just ambient. It's picking up all the ambient sound. And the man was that heard the lecture, he was also very, Luyo is his name, he was very inspired and he was very excited and it was like, I can't wait to go get this and sort of process it. And the next day he came and he said, 30 years I've been in this business and it has never happened to me. He said, it was completely blank. Black and no sound. And he was real embarrassed, and I said, what a great blessing. That's exactly the point. And so he said, but he said, we have the remote one. I said, well, if you're inspired, do something creative with it. And so what he did is the different examples that I gave of these poignant gaps. He made beautiful, showed images of celestial bodies and, the universes that they're seeing through the Hubble spacecraft and these moments of childbirth as the baby leaves the womb, but before it makes its first cry, that pregnant gap. And so there are all these examples that I give, and so he's put it together with pictures, so it's not as boring as just watching me give a talk. It has this whole other dimension to it. So
the focus on the gap only is also a trap. Both the notes and the silences are part of it.
It's all part of it.
Because we are used to the notes, and the gap is ignored. But when we discover, oh wow, there's a gap. And not to fall in the trap, that's all it is. Both are.
Absolutely.
One gives meaning to the other.
That's right. And that's what it's saying here. The opposites inform each other, and the in-betweens as well. But let me make an analogy to the spiritual journey. Sometimes, perhaps, I'm not saying anyone here, but maybe we're always seeking to arrive someplace or understand something or know something or be something or be acknowledged as something. But really the journey is the great gift. Think of all the joy you get, Savitri, in the preparation for a performance. And all that is learned, and in that moment, it's like planning for a wedding, The great joy is almost in all of the in-betweens. And then the moment is exhausted, the performance is over, of course the vibration exists, but then we begin again. Return. So I think we have a good sense of Tuwap. The last one is Afu, A-F-U-W, Afu. We within the text it says, the ultimate stage of forgiveness is expressed as al-afu. Let's begin with a physical metaphor that is part of the word's root, meaning afu-tu. This is an image of a wind blowing across the desert vastness and completely erasing all tracks in the sand. It is as if no one had ever walked there. Such a fundamental image in the root of the word shows us that with al-afu, afu is the sacred name, you do not even notice the fault. In the first stages of forgiveness, you definitely do notice the fault, but you feel there is a possibility for forgiveness, a chance for something to, some healing salve to reach your wounded places. Then you find the strength to overlook it. Eventually, you are moved to turn away from the fault towards Allah whenever awareness of the fault arises, thus transforming negativity into a vision of the divine face. Finally, we come to Afu, Al-Afu, which means to completely forgive, with no trace of the fault even subtly retained. All impressions are cleaned away. All dust on the mirror is cleared away. Here belie it. I think one of the most healing things I ever heard that made such a deep impression on me, that helped me overcome so much. A mirror is never tarnished by the images that are cast upon it. A mirror is never tarnished by the images that are cast upon it. Whatever you've done, whatever's been done to you, it's not who you are, it's not what you, it's not where you are. The mirror is inherently empty and the soul is inherently divine. You understand what I'm saying? No matter what has happened and no matter what you have done, it's a process of constantly arriving. Finally, we come to al-afu, which means to completely forgive, with no trace of the fault even subtly remaining or retained. There's not even a trace of resentment or memory. There are no footprints in the sand. There are no impressions. Your awareness is clean and incapable of being stained. Such is the highest stage of divine forgiveness. We want to strongly emphasize that the stage of not seeing, in quotes, we are referring here, should not, we are referring to here, should not in any way be considered to be unconsciousness or denial. or lack of awareness. Rather, it is your consciousness has been raised to a level of seeing in accordance with divine reality. Your consciousness has been raised to such a level to seeing in accordance with divine reality. With Al-Ghafar and Al-Ghafur, you see the shadows. You even see the worst ugliness when you look at the unforgivable place into which Al-Ghafar penetrates. In Atwa, we notice patches of light and shade, so to speak. Because there's still awareness of that fault you are now turning from. But with Al-Tawab, there's none of that. You no longer have any negative connotation about whatever events have happened to you. We want to make it emphatically clear to our readers that this is not a stage that you should try and rush into.
But it's dying. It's where we go when we die. No, Harvey.
No. It is the culmination of a lengthy inner process. If the negative conditions are not respected sufficiently, they become masked and remain active in the unconscious. Again, Pierre Valiant used to quote Carl Jung, and he would say, if you do not deal with your shadow, it will return to you as your fate. Al-Afu is a doorway in the heart where all attachment to hurt and pain and memories regarding hurt and pain are absolved from within. In that station, such impressions are gone, like the footprints in the desert after the wind. It is like they were never there. There is no sense of a mistake that needs to be corrected. So let us join in the practice together in a purposeful and mindful way. We raise our head up to Ya-Ghafar, feeling this all-embracing forgiveness that can even function to veil our faults or the faults of another from our view. The head comes down, penetrating with Ya-Ghafur. There, it's as if this divine funnel comes down and that healing salve is rubbed in just the right place that it needs to be. With Ya-Tawab, we turn away from whatever faults are there towards Allah. and with a food. A food. We use the breath as if the winds are coming through, removing all footprints, all impressions within the desert of our being. Continue with the head movement. When the head goes up, breathe in. The fog. The head comes down. Penetrating exhalation of the floor. Breathing in as we turn towards God with Tova. Out as you breathe of food. The wind clearing out all the chambers. All impressions are removed. So in the end, remember that the preparation, that the journey is as amazing and beautiful and revealing as the destination. A good Sherpa, a guide in the Himalayan mountains, is one that has made that journey and noticed all the signs and the details and the processes along the way. And in that way, when we become awake to the process, alert, involved, we become agents of our own change and wholesomeness, and we don't know when we might be put up for hire to be helped, in so to speak, invoked as that guide, someone that says, I think you maybe have understand. We maybe have gone this way. Maybe you can help me or be with me along the way. So take nothing for granted. Everything truly is a gift and precious. It's your life that makes you who you are, what you are. And never forget that we're constantly returning. O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly comes from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand thy plan. Most merciful and compassionate, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide us. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy